in the heart of Bears country. I love being a Chicagoan. It's a great city. It's my hometown, and I think it's the best city on earth. But I am a Green Bay Packers fan, and I became a Packers fan early on in my early teen years because my parents have a place outside of Wisconsin Dells. And on Sundays when I was up in Wisconsin, I started watching the Green Bay Packers, knowing they were owned by the city. I'm like, this is a great story. And I started falling in love with the Green Bay Packers.
It was just always relaxing there. Johnny would fish a lot. He'd watch the Packers games up there. Probably in the beginning, I was more of a Bears fan then. But, you know, I'd kind of go in and out of the trailer watching the games with him. But it was nice.
There's a great lake there. There's Nina Lake. And then there's a pond in the back where a gentleman by the name of Al had his property on it. He would let me fish. And I fell in love with the sport of northern pike fishing. I love to fish for northern pike. They're tremendous fighters, and you know they got the teeth. They're like that alligator face, and it's just I got old pictures of me holding up what I would think is a big northern pike. So Al, who let me fish on his pond, his lake back there, was also a huge Packer fan. So I started becoming a Packer fan, and this is before the Brett Favre years. So you get Lindy Infante, the Pack Attack, and it was some of the rougher years. They're starting to win. They're getting there. It was the Cardiac Pack. But then, who comes along when Don gets hurt? The gunslinger, Brett Favre, against the Cincinnati Bengals.
And my suitcase leaving behind.
Now he pumps it. Now he's going to the end zone. There's a man. He's wide open. Touchdown. I can't believe it, Jim. A great pass by Favre.
A good thing going on. A good thing going on.
When I'm watching Packer games, you got to kind of figure out, it's pretty much me watching it alone or with my family. My family who, you know, likes the Packers and loves the Packers like I do. My sister Laura, my sister Lisa.
We watch games when we are together on Sundays or when they are playing. We'll either watch it here at my parents' house or whoever's house we're at.
Oh my God, he gets so nervous. He goes like this, you know, he shakes. And sometimes he goes to another room, especially if they're losing, because he doesn't want to see it. He's a very strong person with that, yeah.
What started me and got me going with the Packers is that they're owned by the city. No other NFL team is. They can never become, you know, the whatever city Packers. They always will be the Green Bay Packers because the city owns them. How cool is that? That's amazing. It's a passion that you see in the city. When you start driving up and you see that stadium come out and you just see the beauty of all of it, you know that there's a pride there that people have. And there's an excitement, there's a buzz. It's like a college campus atmosphere on game day. You see the tailgating, the people letting people park on their lawns, the bands out there. It's just an atmosphere like no other. And when I bring my friends and I bring people up there, they're like, this is amazing. I'm like, I told you. You thought I was like biased, but no, it is amazing. It's an unbelievable feeling. It's a town of 100 and some thousand people with a stadium of 80,000 of an NFL team, an NFL franchise. And it's unbelievable. The feeling, the atmosphere, the energy. Lambeau Field, baby. That's it.
That's what we gotta do. We gotta go through the setup. Make sure everything's running smooth.
Growing up, I was scared. I was scared a lot. I was afraid. I was afraid to go to school. I didn't want to go to school because of bullying.
When Johnny was in grammar school, he was bullied because he was smaller. He really kept it to himself. And then when he did tell us, we felt like, well, someone should be there, but we didn't actually want to go and confront the kids because that would only probably make it worse for him. So when I'd go pick him up from school, I'd kind of be hiding behind, you know, maybe a pillar or a tree just to make sure that he was okay. And then we could be able to walk home together. But he did have a rough. Some kids were pretty mean to him.
Being a child, that's our most formative years of life, which is so unfair to so many children because so many children grow up in tough situations. If it's bullying or being abused or whatever, they grow up in these terrible situations then. They grow up painful, hurt, you know, being hurt as adults. You want to give children a great childhood. You want to give them a great home. And I had a great home. I was very lucky to have a great home. And if I didn't have the great home, I don't know what would have happened to me because I was bullied really bad. And it really affected me. Being called blockhead, having this big head like I do today on a much smaller frame, I was the first one cut from our football team out of 100 guys in my freshman year. I was the first one cut. Senior year, growing 8 inches, you know, junior to senior year. And he said, hey, you're coming to play football. I was afraid probably from third grade on to junior year of high school. And then finally, being a senior, working out, playing offensive tackle, not realizing how different it is to be big and to be big and strong. Because I always had the mentality of being the small one, the one getting hurt. And I think God said, hey, okay, Johnny, here you go. We're going to give you this. Now give back. What can I give back? What I want to do is I want to go to schools, talk to kids, which I'm doing, and talk about bullying. The big transition for me, growing so quickly from one year to the other, and then playing football, was being part of a team. It was a great feeling. I was always the outsider. I was always the one picked on. And I've had friends, but you know, when it's sad to say, when you get bullied and kids know you're not going to fight back, they go after you. They go after you and they say, hey, we're going to keep bullying you and keep picking on you because you're an easy target. So that transition from junior to senior year to becoming a starting left tackle at my high school, and then playing all 4 years through college, becoming preseason All-American, and then going to Germany and playing a year of football there, it was a tremendous growing experience. It was something I didn't expect, something I didn't feel, something I didn't know was going to happen to me. So it was very different, very exciting, and very confusing at the same time, because the thing I didn't want to do most, which was hitting, was a big part of my life now. You're playing football, you're hitting, you're blocking. At left tackle, you're doing a lot of hitting and a lot of blocking and a lot of contact. So there was a lot of great feeling with that and a lot of new feelings and confusing feelings for me. Coming back from Germany, going back to college, finishing up my degree, I became a recruiter in accounting and finance. And the people I worked with were great, phenomenal. I actually sang a couple years ago at the owner's memorial. His name was Doug Christensen, and he was a huge mentor in my life. He gave me so much positive feedback. When I had my times when I would struggle, because I was still struggle to this day with OCD, anxiety, and depression. And I remember sitting in Doug's office, and he would give me these talks, these pep talks, about being positive, lining up who people know who I am, who I think I am, and who I really am. And if I can line those three things together, he goes, that's who you are then, and you're going to be the most peaceful. I was in accounting and finance, and I loved it, but it wasn't my calling. It wasn't who I was. But my sister Lisa said, Johnny, why don't you try something different? Why don't you try to become a singer? I said, how am I going to become a singer at 29 years old? She's like, just try it. So what I did was I made a cassette with a couple Sinatra songs and started passing out to a couple restaurants. A couple weeks later, I start singing. That's how it started.
Hey now, I'm so in love. My
husband's a very good singer. He's got a very good voice. And every time we used to get together with the family, we would sing, we would dance, we would drink. Not me, they did. It was very, very nice. Very family, you know. But I didn't care for Frank Sinatra. But then when John starts singing Sinatra,
Life is a beautiful thing when you got a hold of that string.
So when I was younger, until this day, my favorite music is 80s. Everything from Michael Jackson to big hair rock, whatever they would say, you know, I mean, everything. 80s was my music right there. That was my wheelhouse. So I never really listened to Sinatra. I never listened to Sinatra, I should say. Sinatra was not the music I ever listened to because my parents, being born in Italy, listened to Italian music. Albano, Pavarotti, you know, music from Italy. In college, a good friend of mine got us tickets to see Sinatra live in concert because he was a Sinatra fan. In 1993, I want to say, at the United Center, I saw Frank Sinatra live, and I fell in love with the man and his music. To me, it was amazing, incredible.
'Cause this final world keeps spinning round and round.
He never really sang too much Sinatra beforehand. And when he would come over my house, he would start singing, and I go, Johnny, you sound like him. And he goes, no, I'm like, no, you need to go and try your luck at singing. And he initially started at Rosebud and then did his interview with Mrs. Ditka singing a cappella for her at a restaurant. What a world.
So I started singing at Ditka's when I was 29 years old. A recruiter that I worked with went to go meet one of his clients at Ditka's, at the restaurant. I never went to Ditka's before that. It was opened in 1997, and this was 2001. So one of the recruiters goes there, has dinner with one of his clients, and there's a guy singing Sinatra, I guess, there. And the guy I was working with, his name was Tony, goes, I got a buddy who's trying to do this. And a manager overhears it, and he gives him his card. He goes, John, the next day at work, he goes, he wants you to call him. So I call, and he goes, come on in. We have a different singer every week. The night I go in there, Mrs. Ditka's there, and she goes, sing New York, New York. You know, we got a guy here who's trying to be one of our singers. And I go, right now? She goes, yeah. No microphone, no music, nothing. I sing New York, New York. She goes, he's hired. They give me a four-month deal, a year deal, then a lifetime deal. And that was 16 years ago.
I was at Mike Ditka's restaurant for dinner with some friends, my wife and I, and John had come up and introduced himself. You know, he's a big Packer fan. You know, had the yellow Hummer outside with the Green Bay Packers stickers right there in downtown Chicago. So, I mean, and just what a personality. I mean, the first time you meet this guy, he's just so engaging. He just lights up the whole room. But, you know, so he invited us to go upstairs and, you know, listen to him sing. And what an incredible talent.
When you sing, the place is packed. There's a lot of people in there, you know. And the people that really enjoy it. If Phil was not to be a good singer, it would never last in one place 15 years.
16.
15, 16?
Yeah.
Well.
When you think of Ditka's, you think of the Chicago Bears. You think of Mike Ditka, the Super Bowl 20 team. The 1985 Chicago Bears, one of the greatest teams to ever play. Then you think of Walter Payton, the greatest running back to ever play. When people come to Ditka's, they expect that. They expect the Bears. They expect the feeling of the Bears. To find out that the singer at Ditka's is a huge Packer fan, and behind him on stage, there's a picture of Vince Lombardi. A lot of people take that by surprise. And there's some people who get really angry and take it on a different level. And we'll get in arguments about it. And to me, that's ridiculous. It's a sport. It's an enjoyment. It's something you care about. It's something you should have fun. It's entertainment. You want to see it. You want to enjoy it. It brings people together. If you watch it on Sundays or whatever, it's a fun thing. Anybody who takes it out of context and makes it something to argue about, that's nothing I want to be a part of. Now, when you go to Lambeau Field, that's the experience you get. The Packer fans are tremendous. They welcome you into their homes. You park on their lawns. You can use their bathroom. The whole place is a great experience. And Coach Ditka told me, he goes, Johnny, when I walked into that stadium, when I walked into Lambeau Field as a first-year head coach, it said on the scoreboard, welcome first-year head coach Mike Ditka. Coach Ditka knows the respect that the Green Bay Packers organization gives to their opponents' fans, their own fans, the team. It's just a great organization.
Throw from the side, Randall Cobb's got it. Touchdown, Green Bay.
You get so proud. You can believe how good they are. I don't know if I express myself good right now, but you get something inside of you that your body shakes. How can people be like this? Well, it's beautiful. Everybody can be like that.
Because they like the team and they are very strong for
the
team.
Yeah, but other teams, they don't do that.
And Wisconsin's better. I think the one state that's more strong for their team than any other state, I think.
Friends of mine, family, people who are not Packer fans come to Lambeau Field and say, what a great experience. What an amazing place. It's like nothing like it. Wrigley Field and Lambeau Field are the greatest stadiums. Am I biased? Yeah, but am I wrong? I don't know. You could ask a lot of people, and I think a lot of them would agree with me, who are not even fans of the Cubs or the Packers.
Please stand, remove your hats, and join John Vincent in the singing of our national anthem.
I get a lot of flack for being a Packers fan. I've had journalists here in Chicago make sure that they said, you know, Ditka singer John Vincent seen at Lambeau singing the national anthem with an Aaron Rodgers jersey on. But again, to me, it's fun. if you're a huge Bears fan, be a full blue and orange, all you can Bears fan. And this is coming from a Packer fan. This is somebody who loves the Green Bay Packers. I love the Packers, and I'm green and gold through and through. I was able to sing the national anthem for the Green Bay Packers for the first time in 2003. And how that happened was the great Bob Harlan, his son was friends with Mike Ditka, Brian Harlan. Brian, I asked him, Coach Ditka told him one night, he's like, you know, Johnny's a Packer fan. And he's like, really? And he goes, do you know who his dad is? I'm like, oh my God. And I'm just like in shock. And I'm like, I love the Packers. I go, I love the Cubs. I love the Packers. I'm doing the anthem for the Cubs. Can I come do the anthem for the Packers? And I'm just bugging him. And what does he do? Gives me a shot to do the anthem for the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light? What's so proud?
When I'm doing the national anthem at Lambeau Field or Wrigley Field, it's a tremendous honor. You have all these people, it's quiet, and I get extremely nervous. I get butterflies to this day. I don't want to forget the words. I don't want to mess up. I want to make sure I hit the notes right.
Of the brave.
I've done it every year since then. I've been lucky enough to do two playoff games. One where Hasselbeck says,
we want the ball, we're gonna score.
And Al Harris gets the interception for the touchdown.
Intercepted! Yes! Yes! Al Harris, 56 yards to a game-winning touchdown!
The other one was this past playoff game against the Giants, and we beat them.
Yes! Touchdown! A dagger into the New York Giants!
There's nothing like a playoff win at Lambeau. It's just crazy. It's unbelievable when Roll Out the Barrel is getting played in the fourth quarter, when everybody starts playing Jump Around, the whole place is hopping. Now, this is how amazing these fighter jets are and the pilots of our U.S. military are. They hit that thing, boom, right there. When they're telling you they're coming over at that time. When they come on at that second, at coming how many miles per hour? I don't know how many miles per hour they're coming at. You're like, whoa, these guys are unbelievable. These guys are unbelievable. Those are my heroes. There they go.
I cannot explain the feeling I have. The way he sings, and I could tell that he sings with passion. And I tell you, when I hear the national anthem, and I'm Italian, I get goosebumps all over me. Not because Johnny sings it, because I am proud. I am proud to be Italian, very, very proud. But I'm proud to be an American too.
I want to do well for everybody. I want to please the people who are there. I want them to enjoy it. That's why I sing it. That's why I sing, is to have people enjoy what's happening and to feel good and just to get that amazing feeling you get while singing the national anthem.
O'er the land of the free. And the home of the brave.
So I got publicity for holding the note free. And there's been some really great responses to it and some really bad responses to it. To this day, people say he's being a hot dog. He's holding it for himself. He's doing it, look at me type of thing. Which I want to say is definitely not the case. When you do the anthem, you should do the anthem how you want to do the anthem. I hold free for one reason. My father was born in Italy in 1935. My father was under the Axis powers in Italy. He takes me when I'm about 13 years old to the middle of his town called Palena, Italy. And we're in the piazza. And he goes, Johnny, I want to show you this spot right here. I said, okay. And he shows me. He goes, you see this spot right here? I go, yes. He goes, when I was about 7, 8 years old, he goes, me and your grandmother were walking. And your grandmother goes, vai a prendere quel tarpa sotto la tanca. Go over there, grab that canvas under the tank. We'll make pants for your kids. will cover the firewood. My dad was dirt poor. He cut up motorcycle tires to make shoes. If he had an orange for Christmas, it was a huge gift because you're getting a tropical fruit during December. But my father said, Johnny, your grandmother tells me to go grab that tarp, the canvas. And I go underneath that Nazi tank and I turn around. And while I turn around, there's a Nazi soldier holding a gun to your grandmother's head. And he says to me, you can have it, but she dies. And I thought of the fear and the emotion and the unnerving feeling of war happening right at your doorstep. The terror you must have. And I think of this country, when I think of free, and when I say free, when I yell free, when I sing free, I do it for humanity. And I've noticed when I've held it longer, people cheer and they scream. That's the only reason why I hold it. I hold it for love. I want love for everybody. I want everybody to be happy. If I could do anything that makes somebody feel good, I'm gonna do it. And if that free is something that's coming from my heart, it's not showboating, it's from my heart. That's what I want. I'm there for them. I'm not there for me, I'm there for them. But in return, it's giving me that joy. So it helps all around.